The conference is now being recorded.
Hi, everybody. This is Steve Folstein at Quad AI. Thanks for calling in. I see a few of you were on earlier, but if you've just joined, what we're going to do to help manage traffic, obviously there's a lot of us that are going to be on this call, and we do want to provide some opportunities to ask questions and have discussion. But just to manage background noise, if everybody could please mute their phones to start, and when you've got a question, obviously jump online and you'll have an opportunity to ask. Also, if you could please send an email to our listserv telling us which organization has called in and who from your office is on the line. That way we can get an online attendance list, and we'll save time here on the call trying to go through all of those names. Want to start out by thanking Graham and Kate for offering to join us. This was actually their idea. They came to us asking to do this, and I know there was a lot of enthusiasm among our group for this opportunity, and we definitely appreciate the two of you taking your time to talk to us one-on-one like this in advance of our in-person meeting next month. I believe everyone should have the agenda. I know it was sent out through the listserv. We really got four items that came up. Some of these discussion points came up from our group. Some came from Graham. But there seemed to be a lot of alignment, so I guess that's a good thing. So Graham, I don't know if you had any opening remarks you wanted to make or if you just want to dive right in.
I'm happy to dive right in, Steve. Thank you for hosting this. Obviously, you're a key constituency and stakeholder group for us, and we're here to help promote the best value in education and work with you to make that happen. So we're here to help, and I'm certainly happy to go start going down through the agenda. And I think most of the utility of this call is answering your questions or are promoting some conversation to try and help us do the best we can by the education community.
Great. Thank you very much. I'll let you lead the hour then. As I said, everyone's got the agenda. With this first issue, it should be kind of interesting. Obviously, we put this together prior to last Friday. So sure. Some of these questions we may already have the answers to, but I'm sure there is going to be some follow-up questions and certainly areas for discussion about the revised commendation criteria.
Sure. Well, why don't we start with those as top of the agenda? And obviously, we have new commendation criteria. Those who don't haven't had a chance to look at them yet, if you just go to accme.org, our website, one of the rotating features on the homepage will link you to all of our new criteria that you can download as a PDF and take some time to peruse and work through. But fundamentally, the goal would be, as we've been talking over the last few years, has been to encourage and reward accredited providers for using best practices in engagement and evaluation and change management, and to generate meaningful outcomes that we can hold out to the community as a demonstration of the work that we're all doing together. And you'll also see that there are essentially 16 criteria from which we ask providers like all of you to choose seven. With one from the outcomes criteria. And we have modified essentially all of these criteria in response to the robust feedback. Thank you. We've got from all of you. And each of the criteria has a rationale, some critical elements, and a standard for compliance. And I think what you'll see, not surprisingly, is that the actual criteria themselves have not changed very substantially since we started much of this conversation. Criteria capture the essence of what works in education and what we want to capture as exemplary activities by our CME community. And you'll see evolution in the critical elements and the standards that have been applied based on much of the feedback we've had from you, our board, conversations with the education community. So there will be a webinar next Thursday at 10:30 Central that can will answer much more of the detail of the elements and the standards and questions that you have about the criteria. But we will be, they are essentially available for use for any organization that chooses to use them in the next 2-year cycle. And then they will be required for organizations who are having accreditation decisions being made after November 2019. And this is important if they choose to pursue commendation, which remains completely optional for the education community. So that's a little bit about the impact of the call for comment implementation timeline. I suppose I'll open it up there and see are there questions that anyone on the line has about the accommodation criteria at this point. I'm very interested in ultimately hearing about some more of your experiences in the evolution of your education programs, but maybe first see if there are questions about the accommodation criteria.
If anyone has a question, please feel free to go ahead and ask. If you could just take a minute to introduce yourself and your organization first, that would be helpful.
So, Steve, this is Kate.
Yeah.
I think we recognize that this was just released last week and providers are having a chance to sort of review and digest and think about their CME programs. Like Graham mentioned, we are doing the webinar next week. And, you know, as always, we answer questions when they come in to info@accme.org. So
mm-hmm.
I say that all from the perspective of the folks on the call don't have to think this is their only time to ask us questions. We're available.
Sure. Well, one question I had after reviewing the information that was released last week has to do with the metrics that are being used to determine whether or not you've met the new criteria. It seemed to me that that was one of the areas where there was the most significant change between what was initially released for comment and this final version.
Yeah.
So can you just comment a little bit on what was the rationale for, it seems like now rather than being a percentage of the program, it's based on the size of your program, you sort of that scale based on number of activities. How were those delineations determined?
So you'll recall that we had, one of the primary goals here was to make sure that every organization that we accredit has the capacity and opportunity in with relative similar degrees of comparative effort to achieve accommodation. And our programs, as you know, are have a wide variety of sizes and approaches to education. So that's where the menu approach came from. The standards themselves came through conversations with organizations and in our meetings with the community, and essentially evolved to say that we need to allow organizations the flexibility to show us achievement in these areas through a combination of attestation and a combination of providing activities for us to look at and review. And we dropped, in many cases, our thresholds down from approximately 25% down towards 10%, because we also know this is a this will be a process of evolution, and we need to start somewhere to get the community going and support the community's growth. So the threshold is set pretty low. So right now, the opportunity is to attest to the fact that, for example, members of interprofessional teams are engaged and show us evidence in a couple of your activities that that is the case.
So are these going to be additional fields in the PARS system where we will proactively identify which activities we have planned to meet specific criteria, or it's simply, as you said, just going to be an attestation process?
So not right away. As I think many of you know, we are so PARS is always evolving to capture the best possible information about activities. But you should also know, and that won't be able to capture this degree of granularity at this point in time. We're also, in the next couple of months, likely to be moving over to a new accreditation management system, which will also have additional opportunities to track and manage the accredited provider's workflow around these issues. So how we'll support you in tracking these is a little bit TBD, but we do have the intention of making it as easy as possible so that this can be done relatively passively as you're doing activities and may ultimately transpire to create some sort of a dashboard that allows you to see what's happening in your program and be able to track the trajectory across each of these chosen criteria that you're moving towards.
All right.
Hi, Graham. Graham and Kate, hi, it's Suzanne.
Hi,
guys. One of the questions I've been hearing just informally through some conversations, just to clarify, is this idea that for the activity-based criteria, where we do have to submit evidence for a certain number of activities based on program size, as Steve was just alluding to, those files may be different than those that are selected for our reaccreditation.
Correct.
So can you speak to that again? It's just a little confusing, it seems.
So some activities may meet multiple criteria, and when that's the case, obviously that makes it very simple for a provider to submit that activity file and have it essentially be pointed to from various different criteria. You know, this meets the interprofessional, it meets the public or student, or it meets the outcome metric. But then if you have an activity that you want to put forward as an exemplar for one of the criteria that isn't reflected in something that has been chosen randomly from your portfolio, then you'll just, as you already do, retain the records for that and upload that or provide a description for it as the system will facilitate.
And Suzanne, this is Kate. Think about this in terms of how we currently get examples of compliance with many of the commendation criteria. They're not necessarily part of the sample that we select for performance and practice review, and we wouldn't expect to get, for example, a whole file around an example for one of the new commendation criteria. But it would be what we will do is find a way for the providers to indicate what example they want to put forward and to provide a brief description of that, very similar to what they're currently doing. Does that address your question?
Yeah, actually it's just through, again, some colleagues that were seemed confused, and I didn't want to further confuse them, but I think it's, you know, especially if you have a large CME program and you pick, you know, you've got 15 files you're submitting, but you have 1,000 activities, there's a good chance none of those activities, right, for which you're trying to demonstrate compliance with the new commendation criteria would be included. So just getting clarity on what would be needed, not on the program level where just a description would be required in the self-study, but from that activity-based commendation criteria, what would be required.
Exactly. And what we're working on right now, which I think was part of the announcement, is sort of what would happen to the self-study report outline, how we would get the attestation of the 10% for those activities or for those criteria that have that as a measurement, and, you know, a simple process to get the description of the number of activities that might be required for that criteria. And again, you know, really good question, because one of the things that we heard particularly from you all, the CMSS CPD directors, is to be careful that not everything is activity-based, that some things are examples from the program, and some things are learner-based. So it's, I think you'll see kind of a range in the criteria.
Thank you.
So hi, Kate and Graham. This is Anne Gruby from ASCO.
Hello.
So one idea that I had, because the examples of compliance and non-compliance database that you have on your website is so helpful, is whether there would be any thought to gathering ideas from providers during this transition period before you have official examples of compliance and non-compliance, where providers can suggest, well, here's how I'm thinking about addressing this criterion, so that, A, you guys can make sure we're interpreting the goals of the criteria correctly, and B, maybe we could help give some ideas to providers who might be drawing a blank on how they can meet some of the accommodation criteria.
Yeah, those are terrific ideas, Anne, and you're on the right track, because we're looking to do exactly that, which is share examples of best practices. Our annual meeting next year is designed around the elements of the commendation criteria, and we hope to create a lot of opportunity for providers like ASCO to share their experience with various components of the commendation framework. And that may be a good place to start aggregating some of these examples and recording them for sharing with the rest of the community through the website.
Great.
Any other questions about the new criteria or the implementation timeline? Doesn't sound like it. So, Graham, I know you had wanted to ask us about some of our experiences with some issues that are listed here on the agenda. Do you want to talk about some of those?
Well, just like Anne said, I'm interested in trying to accumulate best practices and examples for sharing with the community. And not that anything we talk about today is going on the record or anything, but we are trying to anticipate many of the emerging changes in education by doing things like more blended learning and social media and ICPE and using patients or students and residents, et cetera, within our programs. So I'm just curious as to how many or any experiences those of you on the line want to share with us as your challenges, but also the positive things that are coming out potentially from some of the work you're doing in these dimensions.
Well, so this is Anne again. I would say that question, to a degree, kind of dovetails with item 4 on the agenda, that I think we are experimenting with blended learning, using social media to engage our learners, but it's tending to be more informal education or adjunct to our educational activities because of the current AMA framework on how we can designate different formats.
Yeah, that's exactly why we've been working with the AMA, to make sure that your ability to be creative and innovative is not restricted by some of those format requirements that have been perceived to be constraining.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that.
Yes.
I'm going to just jump to that, and we can come to the other two in a moment.
Sure.
I don't know, Kate, do you want to say a few words about the AMA actions and where we are?
Sure. So if you haven't had a chance to see the latest sort of update or release on our collaboration with the AMA, it's posted on the homepage. It's in the right-hand corner. It's dated September 1st. It's just a very brief update. But I guess I guess I can assure you that, you know, with the help of a bridge committee, and I should call out Suzanne because she's been such an important part of that bridge committee, we've been working closely with the AMA staff to sort of figure out a way forward that would really align our requirements. And the bridge committee has asked us specifically to try to work on several aspects of that. The first is a shared glossary of terms and definitions. And honestly, I think that will be we've already produced a draft of that with the AMA staff that we'll be sharing back with the Bridge Committee at the end of this month. And I think that's a wonderful opportunity for us to actually see concretely differences in the way we're referring to activity types, and perhaps in some of the activity types we can find sort of common ground and definitions that are strictly that, just definitions and not restrictive requirements. The Bridge Committee also asked us to look at supporting innovation, like you described, Anne, by setting our requirements sort of at a high level against core principles and moving away from format-based requirements. And so I'm hopeful that we'll be able to really bring together an aligned approach that will support you all and not necessarily restrict your innovation. In terms of a timeline, I know that was one of the questions on the agenda. We're working to try and do this quickly. I don't think this is going to be my goal is that this is not disruptive to accredited providers, but actually is liberating, to use a term that Graham likes to use. And so I'm hopeful that, you know, early next year we'll be able to show you the efforts that we're making at alignment. Graham, did you want to add anything?
I would just say that we brought this alignment to both our board and the Council on Medical Education at the AMA. Both organizations have essentially adopted this document, which outlines a vision of moving away from formats and adopting principle-based accreditation and principle-based formats, so that essentially you know, the specific requirements of if this, then that are superseded by, as long as it's
Based on a need, designed to change,
evaluated
appropriately, independent,
commercially independent, all of those principles are intact, then it's CME, it's serving of credit, and that gives you hopefully a ton more flexibility in designing creative approaches to engage your learners through vehicles you know are working to promote positive learning. So we're excited, impatient, but hopefully we'll be developing positive trajectory and come to very specific guidance, documentation, and essentially permission early next year.
Well, I think I don't want to assume to speak for the whole group, but I know based on the discussions we had with you, I think it was back in the spring when you attended our meeting in Chicago, and we were talking about this. I get the sense that this is all going to be received very positively. This is going to be seen as good news, at least among our group.
Yeah, and none of this would preclude any organization from continuing to use any of the existing formats or approaches that they're already using. So there's no threat to existing standards or practices, but essentially also opens up a whole range of any creative approaches you think of to engage your learners constructively will be considered delightfully acceptable.
So this is Anne again. I apologize for all the questions.
No, go for it.
I'm curious if there are any next steps that you all are considering in taking this document, assuming it's completed and approved, and starting conversations with ANCC and ACPE in particular to gauge their willingness to potentially also move to principal-based education to help further interprofessional education and joint accreditation initiatives?
So, that's a great question. I think that it's not just ANCC or ACPE and their own systems, but AAFP and AOA. And I think that all of those other accreditors are willing to sort of participate in conversations around what we're trying to accomplish between the ACCME and the AMA. So the answer is absolutely. I think that you raise joint accreditation specifically, and in the joint accreditation criteria, there's very little limitation around format. And so I think that jointly accredited providers are already positioned sort of in the ACCME model of this principal-based approach. I suspect you're thinking about ANCC and ACPE's individual systems and some of the requirements that they might have in place there.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know I've had a conversation with AAFP, and they're very interested in this because their definitions really mirror in large part the AMA's. So they're anxious to see what happens and to find ways to simplify their process as well. You know, I don't know if anybody from the AAFP is on the phone call now, but I think all of us who play an accreditor role or a credit system role want to find ways to support what you're doing and get out of the way, but still maintain some sort of quality standards.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Kate, this is Mindy McKenna with the American Academy of Family Physicians, and we do have quite a few of us on the call today.
Terrific. Wonderful. Mindy, is that a fair representation of the conversations, for example, that I've had with Amy?
Kate, this is Amy from AAFP, and yeah, I would agree. We're, you know, of course, looking at how we can continue to align our system with other accreditors and then also evolve our system at the same time.
Thanks. Thanks, Amy. And specifically, I mean, just a very small little example, Amy, is the conversation we had around the glossary and, you know, sort of can we share the glossary that AMA and ACCME are working on so that we're all using the same terms and definitions and things like that.
And for those of you, I don't know if anyone from AOA is on the phone, but we've had some preliminary conversations with the folks from AOA about adopting essentially a shared system of principal-based approaches to accreditation and credit management. It would be terrific if we had alignment across. So any other questions about the AMA collaboration specifically?
Now, this is Mindy. Could you speak to performance improvement CME? Because I know that that's been a particular area of confusion or concern in the past.
It hasn't come up as a specific issue. That's a very particular type of essentially both credit and activity type. And I think AMA doesn't anticipate any changes to that particular approach to that type of activity. There's lots of other work going on around QI-based activities with the boards, et cetera, but I think PICME is unlikely to change in a meaningful way as a part of this process, at least.
Graham, this is Carly at the AAFP as well. So I think where, just to clarify then, on C36, when you talk about improvements in the performance of learners, are you talking about performance level outcomes as would be defined by Moore? Are you talking about performance improvement CME, or are you talking about performance depending on how we want to measure that? So that could be a skill-based.
Yeah, PICME might be a metric that you'd want to use, but it wouldn't be limited to PICME. Essentially, it's at the discretion of the provider to show us how you're improving the performance of your learners, and that's a broad view of what you consider to be either skill-based or knowledge or ability attainments or problem-solving ability, et cetera. So all of those things would be meaningful.
Okay, so not necessarily performance and practice, like practice data performance.
Well, if you read down through the rationale, it's really about looking at how clinicians evolve in their performance and practice. And the activity performance improvement should be related to the clinician's ability in their own work environment.
And Carly, this is Kate. PICME would be a good example, but isn't the only way this could be accomplished.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
So maybe I'll go on, Steve, if there aren't other questions.
Sure.
AMA collaboration and commendation, and just say a few words about our collaboration with the boards. And I think all of you know about our collaboration with ABIM. I think last time we talked, we were probably at something like 2.5 or 3 million credits that have been transferred through that system since it was opened up, with several thousand activities now listed in the system, and also now listed on cmefinder.com, which essentially is the search tool that ABIM directs its learners to find Part 2 activities that are relevant to their discipline and to them either geographically or for other reasons. And if you haven't had checked out cmefinder.com yet, I'd encourage you to do so, to make sure you're familiar with it and ensure your MOC-based activities for ABIM are listed in there. CMEFinder.com also has, for now, the REMS activities for the FDA, and will shortly have the ABA and ABP-related materials listed in CMEFinder.com, and as other boards develop relationships with us, then their materials will, of course, be reflected there once they're listed in PARs and so designated. So we anticipate towards the end of this month, early next month, being able to open up the aperture to begin listing activities for pediatrics and anesthesia in PARs. ABP does not want activities listed that are going to occur before the start of the new year. So even though we'll open the system, it's only for listing activities, for ABP at least, that begin in January 2017 or afterwards. But from that point, you can begin to list and describe activities that you're running for pediatricians as essentially being eligible for MOC. And we've been working with ABP about the criterion for their particular MOC program, and we anticipate them making some announcements about those criteria in the next couple of weeks. ABA has had a broad view of what works for their CME program and haven't had restrictions on it. And the purpose of their engagement with us through and with PARS is essentially designating the activity as relevant to anesthesiologists and categorizing it according to ABA's blueprint, which will be uploaded into PARS, and you'll be able to select critical care or pain or anesthesia-related materials from that blueprint so that clinicians who are participating in ABA's MOC MOCA program will be able to be directed to your activities that have an equivalent category designation. And that also clinicians who are diplomats of ABA will be able to find activities that are relevant for them as areas for growth are determined through their participation in things like the MOCA Minute. So ABA's PARS Aperture will be opening later this year as well, potentially as early as the next few weeks. So that'll have our first three boards in the system. Essentially, any activity could be meet the requirements for all three at one time. So you'll be able to issue multiple types of essentially MOC credit for multiple boards for having multiple different types of learners in your program. And all of those activities, once they're listed in PARS, will use all of the work you're already doing to put the activities into PARS and gather that material to make it available through CME Finder to learners and hopefully increase enrollment in your activities as a result of meeting needs of multiple types of learners. Questions about that?
Steve, others, any questions about that?
Well, I guess as somebody who doesn't have members reporting to any of those boards, I'm wondering, are there discussions underway to ultimately expand this beyond those three boards, or is it a matter of the board coming to you to ask to get involved in this process?
So all of those things are fine. We obviously have had some conversations with several boards. ABMS has also been talking with us about working with them to potentially bring a group of boards together to come in and collaborate and work into the system. So we've had essentially gestures of interest from multiple parties, and it's too early to say which additional boards will be engaged with us. But those boards that you think might usefully engage with us, I'd encourage you to encourage them to connect with us. We'd be happy to chat with them.
Yeah, and this is Kate. I guess it's sort of there's a range of interest in this process, and I think the one characteristic that is similar across ABIM, ABP, and ABA is that they were okay with giving up their own review of activities and their approval process if they had one in place. There are still some boards that want to retain a review and approval process, and so far we've been pretty adamant that that's not how we want the sort of the collaboration with PARS and the CME community through PARS to work, because we feel you're already going through a review and approval process for accreditation. Just to elaborate a little bit on what Graham said, probably end of October, beginning of November, we'll be able to provide additional information to the CME community about the program guides from ABA and ABP, just like ABIM has a program guide that describes what its expectations are. We're trying very hard to keep those expectations very much aligned with the accreditation requirements, so that there's not extra work that has to happen. Last week, we had our one-year anniversary of having opened up PARS to ABIM, to activities that would count for ABIM, and we currently have over 4,000 activities registered. So I think it's really, it went from originally about 350 that they had reviewed and approved prior to our collaboration to over 4,000. So I think it's been a very successful collaboration. For any of you that might have come to our workshop, both in April and August, we had the opportunity to talk to representatives from the board, the various boards, ABA, ABIM, and ABP, and we'll continue to find opportunities to do that, because I think, we're very much aligned with respect to what we're trying to accomplish with CME and what they're trying to accomplish or promote with MOC. And so anything we can do to sort of bring those efforts together would be a good thing. Any other questions about that?
Well, I kind of have a follow-up question that I wanted to pose to our group, which is with 4,000 activities posted in there for ABIM, some of our societies must have listed things up there. I'm just wondering if anyone who's on the call has had experience working with this, gotten feedback from your members about it, or is it still are these all other organizations posting their activities and it's still new to those of us in the specialty society world?
So Steve, this is Sean McKinney from ACP, and we've been working with the ABIM and the ACCME for about a year, beginning with a webinar that was held in August of 2015. So we've gone through a lot of adjustments, and we have, I don't know off the top of my head, but dozens of activities that are processed through the PARS system, and they're processed in different ways. There's a batch load system, and then there's an automated system, which the ABIM and the ACCME have given us chance to develop, and which will be online by the end of this year. So there have been some technical challenges, some new workflows that have been created by this, but overall there haven't been any major issues that we haven't been able to overcome. But while I'm on, I would like to ask Graham and Kate if any new information is going to be pending from the ABIM or the ACCME in the next month or so in terms of releases that we should be mindful of.
Thanks, Sean. It's Kate. I think the only additional information we've sort of tried to preview since August is that ABIM is looking to expand what they will accept through PARS for not just their medical knowledge program, which we all would understand to be part two, but to start to look for activities that would count for part four,
right,
or what they call their AQI program. And, you know, in large part due to examples provided, Sean, by you guys and others, I think ABIM is understanding now that there could be activities that count for both at the same time, right? There could be aspects of an activity that's about medical knowledge, but then that also aspects of it that have to do with practice assessment or practice improvement. So the fact that ABIM is going to expand into that in early 2017 just means that providers will start to be able to designate both kinds of MOC credit for ABIM and register activities.
Okay, so we're going to have a QI program that launches early in 17, and I assume I should talk to Natalie at the ABIM about what we should do. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And for providers that maybe do have QI-related or practice improvement-related activities, before we get that up and running in PARS, I know ABIM wants to work with you to have them count, even if we can't get them registered in PARS until we're ready for that. So absolutely touch base with Natalie.
Thanks, Kate.
Sure.
Look, for everyone else on the phone, the key message here is that we're doing what we can to make it possible for your organizations to issue multiple types of credits and meet the needs of multiple types of learners, hopefully in ways that you haven't, you know, by helping you reach audiences you might not have been able to reach before, and drive educational quality that way. And so far, the collaboration with the member boards appears to be opening up many of the opportunities to do that.
Hi, Graham. This is Philip Coquemiller, American Society of Nephrology.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
We're currently working with a group of our members on maintenance of certification and the issues surrounding ABIM and all of that kind of stuff. And during a couple of our discussions, this kind of database came up as a terrific tool for our members and for physicians to find learning activities that satisfy both CME and MOC. But there was a request from a couple of the members for us to check with you to see if this database is going to be expanded at all. For instance, you have a column fee, and it says yes, there's a fee, or no, there's a fee. Well, if there's a fee, our member said it would be nice to know what that fee was. Also, we list the number of MOC points that are available, but we don't list the number of CME credits that might accompany that activity. So I didn't know if there was some kind of a ongoing review of what the relevant fields of information might be.
Great. Well, a couple of things on that, Phil. Thanks for that question. So first of all, creating this type of a system has elaborated the need to potentially create a unified physician identifier and even a curriculum blueprint mapping function that can be shared across boards and accreditors and providers in some useful way. So we're going to try and bring together some consensus and leadership across the organizations to see what we can do about creating some harmonization and simplification across the systems. In many cases, the MOC points are the same as the CME credits, although not universally. And ABIM's construction has essentially said the MOC points will be equivalent to the CME credits for the similar activity in most circumstances. The opportunity to put in a fee amount in there was discussed pretty extensively here and with several of the providers. And the challenge is that many providers have different layers of and levels of fees for different types of learners, or with different types of discount codes, or all sorts of ways of managing that. If we buy it as part of a meeting or not as part of a meeting, you name
early
it.
Early bird or not.
So putting a fee function in there was very challenging. We did think about putting, you know, the maximum or the top fee is to give some context to it, but even that ended up being somewhat problematic. So this is also version one. So we're always open to get feedback about how we can improve it and be of best service to the community.
Yeah, and Phil and to the rest of you that are on the call, I mean, it just strikes me that if you're getting comments like Phil you're getting from your members about things that would be helpful, maybe we could find a way for you to share that information with us because, you know, you're the primary source for these learners. I just wonder if, you know, Steve, at your meeting once a year or something like that, if we could have a conversation around, you know, the CME Finder and the utility of it and feedback, we would welcome that information. I expect that what we've launched is just version one, and, you know, we'll see how we can improve it and make it useful as we go.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks very much.
This is Mindy. I saw one of the items on the agenda for today was to talk a little bit about MACRA. Is this a good time to do that?
I'm happy to, Mindy. Steve, do you want to move to that?
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Sure. So briefly, we don't have any decision from CMS yet. But we have been in several conversations with CMS about a variety of things. Just before I mention MIPS and MACRA, I'll just point out that CMS, following several conversations with them, produced a new clarifying statement about their expectation for reporting of faculty in programs that are commercially sponsored to open payments, essentially clarifying that organizations like all of yours who have who accept commercial support for programs should no longer provide that information into open payments. They are not interested in receiving it, and they don't want it. They find that it has been problematic for them to be getting this type of information and insinuating a relationship with faculty between the commercial sponsors and faculty and accredited CME that is not allowed to exist and isn't supposed to exist. And we are, of course, having several conversations with the pharmaceutical companies, at least one of whom is most recently reversing its decisions and stopping expecting accredited providers to give that information to them, whether or not it was prior part of the grant application and requirements. So that's positive movement from CMS, essentially recognizing the accreditation standards that we all uphold and obviating you from a requirement that had been in place for some companies, but hopefully now will disappear from most, if not all, of the pharmaceutical sponsors. On MIPS and MACRA, we've had several relatively detailed conversations with some of the leadership at CMS about designating accredited CME for various components of the MIPS program as meeting reporting requirements there. And we had some technical conversations with them about potentially using PARS as the reporting mechanism for clinicians in your specialties to be able to receive essentially their MIPS remuneration on the basis of engagement in your provider level activities. So they are, I would say at this point, pretty well informed about the capacity of the CME system to provide independent and high quality performance improvement education to the community that they need to be engaged in the program. But they have yet to determine in their rulemaking, or at least their public rulemaking, what the role of CME will be and what the role of PARS, if any, will be through the CMS system, and whether PARS will be designated as a national reporting data systems for them. So we have to wait and see. We're anticipating early November as the timeline of which we hear from CMS as to what they've ultimately decided. They have continued to suggest that they're still going to have expectations of beginning some tracking in 2017, although, as you know, they've relaxed some of the requirements for 2017 and even 2018 for clinicians engaging in the MIPS and MACRA program. So the bottom line is we've fully briefed, I think, the folks at CMS about what our accreditation system can do and what PARS can do. It's ultimately at their discretion as to whether or not they designate it as part of the reporting requirements or the reporting systems for MIPS.
Graham, hi. It's Suzanne again. I just, not to have a little infomercial here, but I think this is where the relationship with CMSS and ACCME is so powerful. I think with, you know, Norm's leadership and our CME directors group, and this year under Steve's outstanding leadership, you know, I think we all not only collectively come together to help inform an organizational response, but then individually, I know many of us have been working with our Washington offices to ensure the inclusion of such language in our own responses. So I just, as these issues arise, I think this is one example, but of many, where we need to work together.
Yeah.
Graham, this is Norm. May I just make a comment?
Absolutely, Norm. Go ahead.
Just to remind the folks, because there are 50 of you on the call, most of you will be at the annual meeting of CMSS. Kate Goodrich from CMS will be at the annual meeting, and she will be talking about the final rule, which will have been approved just a week or two before the meeting. So watch for that on the agenda. We are currently have her scheduled for late afternoon after you finish your groups, but we may have to trade her for the early morning Friday plenary, so watch your schedules.
Great, and thank you, Norm, and it's worth acknowledging, of course, leadership from Norm and CMSS, both in the open payments issue, as well as the engagement in the public comment to CMS about this very issue, has just been terrific, and we've been sharing a lot of information back and forth, and it's a very positive collegial relationship. So thank you, Norm. Questions about MIPS or MACRA or CMS or open payments or anything else on the agenda? Is there anything that ACCME is doing you wish we wouldn't do, or anything you'd like us to do that we're not currently doing, or anything else you wanted to bring up? We're here to help.
Well, sounds like everybody is completely thrilled with the service they are getting from your office and your staff. Things are just going great down there in Chicago these days.
We're trying.
Yeah, our also little gremlin got in and muted all of their lines all at once.
Well, I would just like to say that, you know, having been involved in CMSS for 10 years now, that it's, you know, just thank you both again for stepping forward and volunteering your time to meet with us in this way and talk with us. I think just the openness and the easiness with which we can communicate has been a real advantage, and I think that's definitely been a positive development, and we all appreciate it. Will we be seeing one or both of you at our annual meeting in D.C. next month?
This is Kate. I'll be there for sure.
Excellent, because by that time we will probably have some follow-up questions for you.
Which is great. It's always great. I enjoy it.
Great. Bring them on. And always feel free to use info@accme.org if you have more structured questions or specific questions we can help you with.
Terrific. Well, again, thank you both for your time and for sharing all this information with us. For everybody from the CPD Directors Group, thank you for taking the time to call in and for your excellent questions and the discussion. Obviously, our meeting in D.C. is not that far away. As Norm mentioned, you keep an eye out on your email for updates on the agenda. We'll be sending out agenda materials for our part of the program soon. And we look forward to seeing everybody in Washington next month. So unless there are any final questions, thank you, everyone. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you so
Thanks
much.
Everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.